Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings Podcast, where today our guest is from Altona Rare Earths, which is Rare Earths Company, as the name might suggest, that is on its way over from the Aquis Exchange to the main market. Now, the non-executive director and geological consultant for Altona Rare Earths, Cedric Simone, is joining us as our guest today on the podcast. So, hello, Cedric. You're very welcome to the Market Musings Podcast. How are you doing?
Hi, Mark. Thank you. I'm very good. Thank you.
Excellent.
Very happy to be here.
It's good to be talking to you on this podcast, Cedric. Looking forward to it. And Kenny, of course, is joining us.
Hi, Cedric. You're welcome on the podcast, as always.
Hi, Kenny.
And where are you calling from today, Cedric?
Sorry?
So where is it you're based? Where are you calling from today?
Right now I'm in Mozambique.
Yeah, but it's quite amazing technology today. So I'm in Scotland, Mark's in Holland, and you're in Mozambique. So it's great we can all connect in this way. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
How are things in Mozambique? Are things a bit better than they were?
As far as the country is concerned, Mozambique is a country which is doing well, except for a small part in the northeast, where I'm sure you've heard about the events which happened some weeks back. It has calmed down a bit, but this is something which is very localized. It's only a small part of the country which is affected.
Okay.
And exploration and mining companies in other parts of the country are operating normally.
Okay. That's good. Okay. So whereabouts in Mozambique are you?
I'm in Cabo Delgado. I'm actually visiting a friend on a mine which has got nothing to do with rare earth.
Okay.
I can't tell you more about this, but yeah, I'm enjoying a few days with some other geologists talking about geology.
Oh, good. That sounds fun. Yeah, okay. Well, what we like to do on this podcast, Cedric, is talk really about the people behind the business. We believe that people buy people, and people have lots of stories. And you being a geologist is more exciting than just being the sort of CEO of a company, because of course you have all the technical knowledge about any projects that you're working on. So what we'd like to do is just for the first 10 to 15 minutes or so, we can hand over to you. You can introduce yourself, take us back as far as you like in your past. You know, you can go back to university or even earlier than that, and a bit about where you've come from, your past career, and really, yeah, how you fell into geology and what you like, and then how your career has progressed towards Altona. So, if that's okay with you, then sort of invite you to give us a bit of your story.
Sure. All right. So where to start? I got my first geological hammer. You know that the hammer is the most important tool for geologists. I got my first geological hammer when I was 8 years old for Christmas. So I've always wanted to be a geologist. Fossils, minerals were my passion when I was a kid. And after high school, I knew I was going to university to study geology, because this is what I wanted to do. So I studied geology mostly at the University of Nantes in France, which was a good place for that, which still is. And I just went to the University of Saint-Étienne to do the second years of my master's degree in France. First year and the second year of the master's degree are two separate degrees. So when I finished my studies, I had the opportunity to do an internship in Kenya in a ruby mine. Mm-hmm. And I went there. I did that internship, And when I came back to France, I used the equipment from the university to do a bit of research of some samples I brought back. I sent a report to the company, which was called Rockland, a local Kenyan company, indigenous. And they were quite impressed and interested with the openings that brought to the understanding of what they were doing. So they invited me to come back for a job, my first formal job. And while I was there, I quickly realized that this type of deposits, ruby deposits, were not understood at all. There had been very little research done on them. So quickly, I contacted back my university in Nantes, and we agreed that I would be doing a PhD on these ruby deposits while I was working at the mine. So I worked at this mine for 5 years, and it was a very interesting experience, because when you are in a small mine like this with about 100 employees, I started as a geologist and a chief geologist, and I finished as a general manager of the mine. You get the opportunity to see every possible angle of a mining operation. Anything from mining, geology, drilling, security, logistics, marketing, everything. So you get a hell of a lot of experience with this sort of job. And I think that gave a good start to my career. When I finished with this job, I moved back to France, and I was hired in a fluorspar mine in central France. And that was a bit the same kind of setup. The operation was much bigger, but also a small team. I was part of a management team of 5 people. And so you learn not only, you don't do just your job, but you learn also all the aspects of the operations. And that that company was called Sogerem. When I entered, it was a subsidiary of Pechiney, which was a very large French industrial group. Then we merged with Alcan. And slightly before I left this company, Alcan merged with Rio Tinto, which became Rio Tinto Alcan. Mm-hmm. So this operation taught me a lot, because we had 2 open pits, and I was in charge of the 2 open pits as mine manager. And we had an underground mining operation, which had its own engineer, but I was doing also the underground mine geology. We had 2 plants, a flotation plant and a dense medium separation plant. Plus, we had exploration programs to try to renew the resources of the mine, which were dwindling after almost 50 years of operation. And I was also in charge of environmental aspects having to do with water treatments, impact on the environment, how to remediate impacts. So on this sort of job, you really learn a lot, and you learn it very practically. One of the things I really like with the career, and I enjoy with the career I've had so far, is that I've done so many different jobs on exploration, on development, on mining, that now when I look at a new project, like with Altona, we are doing a lot of target generation. We are developing new projects. I don't look at it just as a prospecting geologist, as an exploration geologist. I look at it having in mind the full cycle up to the moment we are going to start producing, exporting. Mm-hmm. And to me, that makes it a lot easier to understand a project, to understand the value of a project, to understand its potential. It's a lot easier with all this experience. So when I worked for 3 years at the fluorspar mine up to 2006, I passed through the alumina refinery of Gardanne in France, which was another interesting experience. At the time, I was being trained as a black belt, Lean Six Sigma black belt, which was another awesome thing to learn. But then I got an opportunity to go back to Kenya, and Africa called me back, so I went. I went to work as an Africa region manager for an exploration company called IG Resources. That was a Swedish company listed on the Oslo Stock Exchange. And there I was in charge of exploration in Kenya for gold projects and in Burundi for gold and base metal projects. Mm-hmm. So that was mostly exploration. Around 2009, the company started to have difficulties to fund its operations. That was a crisis, like everyone else. So IG decided to focus on some other projects they had up there in Sweden, a nickel project, which became later Nickel Mountain. So we shut down the operations in Kenya and in Burundi. By that time, we had started a joint venture with a South African company called Goldplat, and we had actually started a small-scale gold mine in Kenya called Kilimapesa, which is now being revived by another group called Mayflower. And at that time, there was quite a bit of exploration activity in Kenya. So when I left IGE, I sat with the management and we agreed that I would take over all the equipment that we had in the company, and I could use that to start a contracting exploration services company in Kenya, which is called Akili Mineral Services. And since 2010, it has served about 70 clients, local, international, in Kenya, in other African countries. And the company is still alive. Activities went down a little bit in Kenya over the past few years, but it's picking up again. So in 2014, I started to get involved with a company called New Energy, and the company was doing coal bed methane exploration, coal seam gas, also called coal seam gas. So we started to do exploration for coal seam gas in Tanzania, in Malawi, and in Mozambique. And this is what took me to Mozambique for the first time. And I was busy with this for quite a while. So I learned the language, Portuguese. I learned a lot about the country, about the industry. And when I left this company in 2017, I continued to pursue other business opportunities in Mozambique. Mm-hmm. I think that takes us close to when I started to get involved with Altona. That was in the beginning of last year. Altona is a startup company, and through mutual friends and mutual connections, I got introduced to that company, first as a consultant, because the company didn't have a geologist. The company was putting in place a new strategy, had decided to focus on rare earths. And I had made some introductions to some potential rare earth projects in other African countries. And so I started to work with Altona, and quite rapidly I was offered a position as a non-executive director on the board, besides the consultant position. And I think what excites me most with Altona is it's a startup. We are building something from scratch. We are a small team. We have a board with five people. And we are building a new company, a new strategy, a new vision, all from scratch, and putting together projects. Starting this project is extremely exciting. I have worked on rare earth projects before. As part of what I've been doing with my company, Akili Mineral Services, I have drilled several rare earth projects. For example, the Mrima project in southern Kenya, but also other projects in western Kenya. So I've got quite a bit of experience with rare earths. One of the things which is quite challenging with rare earth is that you don't look just at the geology, you don't look just at the grade. First, when you talk about rare earths, you're talking about over a dozen of different chemical elements, each of which has got its own value, its own characteristics, its own uses. So these are relatively complex projects, and you can't approach it looking just at the volume and the grade. You also have to look at things like metallurgy. How easy will it be to prepare a concentrate and then to extract the rare earths from the concentrate? It's quite interesting.
Yep. Can I just jump back for 2 minutes, Cedric? Obviously, you've got a wealth of experience. I mean, everything from sort of cold face with your hammer right through to the sort of technical side and managerial side and then the corporate side. I mean, obviously, working in Africa, there's lots of different languages. I mean, I had a quick look at your bio, and I think you're pretty much fluent in four or five languages.
Yes, I use on a daily basis. I use five different languages every day. I use French, English, Swahili, Portuguese, and Amharic, which is an Ethiopian language.
Yeah, and imagine that's half the battle in Africa, being able to communicate with the various different departments. It's quite a talent. I mean, I struggle with English on my own, never mind any other languages. I take my hat off to you. It's a fantastic talent, and it's a key sort of, you know, skill set that you possess. And obviously, it's pretty easy to see why Altona were keen to, you know, have you on board as a non-executive director. I wonder, just for the benefit of our listeners, because obviously we're going to talk a lot about rare earth elements, could you give us an overview of what rare earth elements are and what their sort of main uses are in the industry?
Right. Rare earth elements are not actually that rare. They are contained in many different types of rocks and soils. We call them rare earths because areas where they are concentrated enough to be exploited commercially are quite rare. And these are very specific types of geology. There are less than half a dozen types of geological environments where you can find rare earths, and those who are familiar with Altona's press release or other rare earths companies' press release will have heard about carbonatites, will have heard about ionic clays. So these are some of the environments where you can find rare earths concentrated enough to be exploited. Rare earths is a group of about 14 elements. And they've been grouped together because they have similar characteristics, but each of these elements has got its own use. So some are used as a catalyst, some are used for basic industrial things like cerium oxide is used for glass polishing. Some enter in the composition of metal alloys, some are used for lasers. There are many different uses. But I think in terms of volume, most of the usage is for neodymium and praseodymium at the moment. Mm-hmm. And this usage goes into permanent magnets. And permanent magnets, you will find permanent magnets in anything that is used to generate electricity or alternators or to consume electricity. Electric motors. And as you know, mankind is going towards green energy, towards better use of electricity, especially green electricity. So these magnets are critical to the development of green energy. For example, wind turbines require ND and PR. And also for the use of this electricity, for example, electric vehicles, every single motor in an electric vehicle requires the same element. Yep. So these are these are kind of new metals. The demand for rare earths is increasing a lot and will continue to increase in the future. So these are the elements, together with some other elements like lithium, like cobalt, like tantalite, which are going to supply the future of mankind.
Yeah, and I believe obviously that, you know, there's also applications in the military field as well for rare earths, and it seems, I mean, every article you read just now, you know, China pretty much dominates the whole market, whether it's in, you know, industrial use or military use.
Yeah, these elements are critical to the future of mankind. Again, most of the production is from China. It's over 60%. There is some production in the USA, some production in Australia, and some production in Myanmar. So no production in Europe. It's critical for many countries, many industrial countries, to break away from the monopoly or quasi-monopoly of China on rare earths to be able to supply their own industry.
Yeah, no, there's tons of article in this. So there isn't even President Biden with his green energy revolution. I mean, there's the critical metals, you know, rare earths is high on his list of trying to source supply of these elements. So just jumping back to Altona then. So why Africa for Altona, Cedric?
Africa is a continent which has a lot of mineral resources, which has seen a lot of exploration, and where there are lots of rare earth resources. Africa is a mosaic of many different countries and many different cultures. It shouldn't be seen as a single block, okay? But in terms of geology, you have some larger structures which cut across Africa, across several countries. Obviously, geological structures don't care about borders. And in particular, you have the rift systems. You have the East African rift system. You have the Central and West African rift system. And also, you have to remember that Africa was once a same landmass as South America, Brazil. And when the Atlantic Ocean opened up, it separated these two parts of that continent. So you've got Africa on one side and South America on the other side. When this phenomenon started, when this separation started, that was also a rift. Now, rift valleys are associated to carbonatites and to alkaline rocks. These rocks are associated to rare earth elements and also some other metals like niobium, like, and some other elements like phosphate. So you find these carbonatites associated to the remnant of the rifts on the western coast of Africa, to the Central Africa rift system and the East Africa rift system, which is where the Monte Muambe project is located, associated to that. So basically, Africa is a good continent for carbonatite-associated rare earths. And it also happens that the ionic clay type of rare earth deposit, which is a lot less known, which is something a lot more new than the carbonatite type. There is also a lot of potential in Africa for different reasons, because you have the right source rocks, the right types of granite, of syenite, which contains rare earth elements, and you have the right climatic and topographic condition so that these elements can be enriched in the soil above the source rock or next to the source rock, and give birth to ionic clay rare earth deposits.
Yeah, just jumping back to Mount Moambi that you mentioned there. Obviously, that's the first project that Altona have now, you know, officially started to earn in on. Could you give us a sort of high level overview of the project? I mean, and I know from my research that there's a lot of historical data and drilling on this project, so it looks really exciting. So it does.
Right. Are you still there?
Yep, still here. Well, will I do that bit again?
All right. No, it's all right. I'm sure you will cut whatever you need to cut.
Yeah. Mark, you still here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yep, sorry. Right. Yeah. Sorry. On you go.
All right. So Monte Muambe is a very interesting project. It belongs to the carbonatite category, and it was initially recognized in the 1960s as it was recognized as a carbonatite. So carbonatite, as I said, have potential for different elements. There was some exploration done at the time, and in the 1980s, fluorspar was discovered at that site, and fluorspar is one of the minerals that can be sometimes associated with carbonatite. So the more recent exploration, which was done on Monte Muambe about 10 years ago, was focused specifically on fluorspar, at least initially. A lot of drilling was done, 12,000 meters, and even an inferred maiden fluorspar resource was defined. But while the company which was there was drilling for fluorspar, they also started to notice that they were rare earth. Some of the holes were given good rare earth results. Unfortunately, they stopped their activities in 2012, so they didn't push further. And we selected this target as an acquisition target for Altona because the geological context was good. The carbonatite is quite large. The diameter is over 4 kilometers. It's also a good place to work in Mozambique. It's in Tete province. It's far away, very far away from this troubled area in Palma. But even more important, there is good infrastructure, there are good services because there are already many mines operating in this province. There are coal mines, Vale is there, ICVL is there, Jindal is there. There are some iron ore projects, there are some smaller gold mines. There is a lot of activity, of mining activity. So you can find contractors if you need to, drilling contractors. There is a lot of choice. And so we looked back at the data, and we found that some of the intercepts had grades that would be viable grades if you find a volume large enough. And we also noticed quickly that the surface area which had been explored, if you look at the whole carbonatite, was less than 5%. So 95% of that carbonatite has not been explored because all the work was focused on almost all the work was focused on fluorite. And especially when you look at carbonatite deposits, you're going to want to look for parts which have been weathered a lot. Because during the weathering process, the carbonate mineral, the calcite, tends to be dissolved, and that enriches the content of other minerals, including the minerals that are containing rare earth elements. And you would expect that the part of the carbonatite which is the most weathered is not the part which is outcropping the best. And previous drilling was mostly done on areas which were outcropping, so which were not, according to us, the best ones for rare earths. So our exploration plan is going to be aimed at understanding better the geology of the whole complex, but also exploring in particular this remaining 95%, which has not been explored, and focusing on the areas which have the best potential, the best, which feed the best to the geological models we know for rare earth elements.
Yep. And I guess as part of the sort of first and second stage of the earning, there's quite a bit of drilling planned. I assume this is to try and define some sort of resource within the areas that have already been drilled.
It's the areas that have already been drilled, they do not allow us to define a resource. There is not enough intercepts. But the first phase of work is going to be mostly to get our bearings right, to see where a potential resource in this complex would be located, to find the best spots. If things go very well, by the end of the first phase of work, we might have a maiden resource. But our work program is to have the resource defined at the end of the second phase of work. Once we've identified the area where we want to work, then we are going to do additional drilling, resource drilling, and that's where we expect to get the first resource defined.
And I remember actually looking at some of the drilling intercepts, the historical ones, that you know, most of the intercepts, mineralization, you know, it ended in good mineralization. So it looks as if, you know, there's this potential for this to be open at depth as well.
That's correct. There is potential at depth below these intercepts. Also, some of them are located in the side of drilling areas of targets, meaning that they are open either, depending on the cases, to the south, to the west, but they are open both at depth and laterally.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a decent project, and I'm looking forward to what these guys come up with in the next sort of 6 months as you complete phase one and move into phase two. And obviously, that's not the only project that you guys are looking at the moment. You've got a few under due diligence, and I also believe that you're looking in other countries as well in Africa to perhaps identify new targets or projects, sorry.
Yeah. This is correct. We are doing a lot of target generation activity. We are looking at several countries. I can't go too much into the details about this. I'm sure you will understand why. But basically, we are basing our choices in terms of geological model, the abundance of geological environments which have got potential for rare earths. So carbonatites are relatively well known in Africa, well mapped. People know where they are because they kind of stand in the landscape. Either they are hills, or they are mineralized one way or another, or they have very clear geophysical characteristics. So people know where they are, so you just need to review them. With ionic clay, it's a lot more challenging because there are very few ionic clay deposits known in Africa. As I said, it's a new concept. So you have to dig the information, the characteristics, the key characteristics of the source rocks, of the environment, based on what is known on other ionic clay deposits, be it in Africa or in China. And you have to do a lot of thinking about where you could find the same thing in Africa. And so that's about the geology. Then obviously, when we consider different jurisdictions, we look at the mining legislation. I've worked in many different jurisdictions in Africa. Conditions can be quite different. We look also at the general friendliness of each country towards investment, especially investment in the mining sector. We look obviously at the security conditions. That's very important. We look at things like population density. You wouldn't want to go in areas which are very densely populated because it will be more complicated. If you can find an area which is less densely populated, It will be easier to deal with the environmental and social aspects. It will be easier to deal with resettlement necessary. Like Monte Muambe, there is no resettlement involved. It's a very nobody lives there.
I wonder if we can just, you've mentioned carbonatites and ionic clays before, Cedric, and you also said there are less than, was it 12? Sort of, you think you said less than a dozen, is it, or half a dozen rare earth deposits around the world? But not very many, and of course, the company is at an exciting part, particularly with it being a startup, acquiring these projects in Monte Muambe, looking like the flagship project that's looking quite good. But I wonder if you can explain just a little bit, just briefly, what are the differences in terms of the deposits of carbonatites and ionic clays? Does it produce different grades of rare earths or different quality?
Right. So when I said less than half a dozen, I'm talking about geological types of deposits, not actual deposits. There are many rare earth deposits in the world. So the two most important types of rare earth deposits are carbonatite and ionic clay. They are very different. Carbonatites are magma, which came from below the Earth's crust, which rose in the crust. And as they were rising, they got differentiated, which means that part of the magma crystallizes, some reactions occur. There can be also interactions with the host rock. Sometimes some liquids or gases are taken out of the magma. And all this will make ultimately rare earth minerals crystallize in one part or another part of the system. So when you mine a carbonatite, you can mine fresh rock, which is hard, or you can mine weathered rock, which may be a bit softer. But these deposits are relatively high grade. You're looking at grades between 2.5 and 6% total rare earth, TREO, total rare earth oxide. This is one of the metrics we use. And these deposits, the depth to which you can mine them depends on the degree of weathering, depends also on the topography. But you can mine relatively deep. Can be 50 meters below the surface, 100 meters below the surface, because the ore body is going deep into the ground. It's like a vertical pipe, to make it very simple. With ionic clays, it's very different. The ore body is made of clay from the weathering of other rocks. So basically, the ore body is part of the soil profile. And the ore body is flat lying at the surface. And the thickness can depend, but usually you are not going to go deeper than 10 meters below the surface. So you're not looking at a deep pit, you're looking at strip mining, where you remove a small amount of ground over a large surface area. So of course, you don't do this all at once, you do it step by step, strip by strip. And as soon as you've opened up a strip and taken the ore out to process it and to extract the rare earths, you're going to backfill and rehabilitate that strip of land to go to the next one, as you go to the next. So carbonatite mining may involve, for example, heavy excavation operations like blasting, like ripping with a bulldozer, whereas with ionic clay, it's usually free digging. There are different ways to extract rare earths from ionic clay deposit. You can do in-situ leaching. Mm-hmm. You can extract the ore and then you do heap leaching. So you put the ore at the surface on a plastic sheet and you leach it at the surface. Heap leaching is environmentally more friendly because you control better the impact on the environment. If you do in situ leaching, you put your leaching solution into the ground, like they do in China, or like they used to. They are changing this. And you don't know where some of it goes, but when you do heap leaching at the surface, you know exactly where everything is going to go, how it's going to be recycled into your plant, how it's going to be treated if necessary before to be released into the environment. The other types of rare earth deposits, hydrothermal rare earth deposits can be relatively high grade, but they are very rare and they are hard to find. You can find rare earths also in heavy mineral sands, in the form of a mineral called monazite. Monazite is a little bit more difficult to process, so you need to have some very good grades for this to be viable. But, so we don't focus too much on this. As Altona, we focus mostly on carbonatite and ionic clay, and we keep an eye on hydrothermal opportunities.
Okay. And ionic clay is generally easier to extract, is it?
Yes, it's free digging, meaning you can just extract an excavator.
Okay.
You don't have to break it apart.
Okay. Thank you for that. Thank you for explaining that. I wonder if we perhaps to sort of finish up this podcast, maybe I'd just like to ask you, you have had a very vast experience in mining, as Kenny said, from the coalface all the way up to to running a mine and being becoming a very competent geologist. And you said you liked Altona because it's a startup, it's a small team, it's a new vision. I wonder if you can elaborate a little bit more on what you do like about Altona Rare Earths and why you joined and really what it is you're looking forward to with building the story.
Well, when you start a business right from scratch, you have all the opportunities to do things in the best way you feel they should be done. You're a small team, so it's easy to communicate between few people to agree on the way we are doing to do things. So for me, as a geologist working with Altona, I am able to... I get the resources I need to do what I think is necessary. Of course, it's a startup, so the resources are not much, but also we don't use much. And I'm based in Africa. It's very easy for me to hop into a plane and to go to whichever African countries we want to look at and to get the data that we need and to get in touch with the people who may have the licenses or with the authorities if we are going to apply for a license. So we are able to really define what we want to do. We are able to select carefully the projects we want to make sure these are good projects, viable projects. We are also able to do business in the way we think is the best for everybody, in the most ethical possible way. For example, we are the ones who choose how we are going to interact with our local partners, with stakeholders, with the community. And for me, that's very important because there are many different ways you can do business. You can just go into an African country, into a community, and do whatever will be the most profitable for you or you feel will be the most. Or you can do it the right way and make sure that it's profitable not just for you, but also for the other people who will be involved in the project, starting especially with the local community. So for me, it's very important to set this parameter right from the start. And Altona being a startup and all of us having the same philosophy, the same way of thinking, I find it absolutely great. We can really do things the way we think they should be done.
Okay. And what are the key things you're perhaps looking forward to, particularly with Monte Mwembe in the near future?
Monte Mwembe is an exciting project. We need to get some answers. As I explained, the first phase of work will be to get our bearings with the ore body we are looking at, and especially this 95% that has been so far not explored. So the exciting thing will be to start drilling. We are looking forward to start drilling somewhere around the end of the third quarter or the beginning of the fourth quarter. Right now, we are busy with doing the required environmental licensing process, which is pretty straightforward because it's we are talking just about drilling. So it's a normal process, but there is some regulations that need to be followed. as soon as this has been completed, we'll start moving the drilling rigs and the geologists to site. And it's the exciting part when you are a geologist is always when you see the cores coming out. Mm-hmm. And when you start doing them and you see the grade and you see the geology. Mm. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Okay. Okay, good. Yeah, that is the most exciting part for everyone, I think. Kenny, do you have any final thoughts or questions? Or are you good?
No, I'm good. I've done enough talking, Mark. Sorry for blanking you for 10 minutes there. But that's, I think it's a good place to finish. Yep, it's been a bit of an education for me. So no, it was great to have you on, Cedric. And hopefully we'll have you back on again soon and you can give us some updates and the due diligence and the other projects and any progress at Mount Moambi.
Sure, I'll be pleased to do so.
Yeah, I think that would be good as the company progresses, and it's nice to, because there aren't that many rare earth companies out there, so if we can speak to you again in the future, we can be our rare earth man. Which I think will help to, help people to understand what's going on. But listen, thank you very much, Cedric, for your time today, and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.